What's Always Drink the Good Stuff?
It's about food, art, travel, music, culture, lifestyle. It's interesting conversations with interesting people. And yes, sometimes it's even about drinking the good stuff.
Hello, everybody. We're really thrilled to have with us today the famous composer, conductor, musician, and professor, Greg Hosharyan. Greg, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Stepan, for having me here. I appreciate it.
I'm a big fan of yours. I love the music you do. I love what you do. I really appreciate this. And I'm glad you're here so we can talk about your art, your music, and music in general.
Thank you so much.
Of all the way I described you, composer, conductor, musician, professor, how do you describe yourself?
Well, that's a good question. I do, as my profession is, I'm a musician, composer, conductor, but it's not just a profession. It's been a part of me my whole life since I was born, because my father was a musician, composer, conductor as well, and I grew up seeing that, so it's always been part of my blood. So it's not just my profession or my work, but it's just who I am always as a person. As I'm doing music, composing, conducting, playing the piano, doing events, it's part of who I am. And I think if someone took that away, I wouldn't be a complete person anymore,
you know? And which means the most to you? Of the four things I described you as?
The thing, I feel like they're all together. You know, there's none that I'm never doing. I'm always doing. So when I'm playing the piano, I'm always composing or improvising. And somehow I'm directing something too at the same time. So even though I might not be always up there conducting, I'm directing a band or conducting an orchestra. It's still that directing type of feeling. So.
Now, Mozart started at the age of 3.
Yeah.
When did you begin?
About the same, yeah. 3-4 years old, yeah.
And because of your father's influence, correct?
Because of my father's influence, yeah.
Your late father, Edward Hosharyan, was a famous conductor and composer.
Yes.
Yeah. And how did he influence you?
So at our house, we had a recording studio, which is still there, and now I took it over, and it's my recording studio, and now my kids are part of that, that cycle as well. But, you know, just being around the music all the time, I was hearing music, I was around the music, I was in his studio, the musicians would come over, and I was always there, and he gave me a tambourine, and that's the first thing I learned how to play, and I started to learn how to play rhythms and things, and there's pictures of me playing with the group at 4 years old, 5 years old, and then started getting into piano, and that's where I started developing my piano skills as well.
And how did it feel to have your father as your teacher? Some kids resent being taught by their parents.
That's a really good question that you bring up, because now I have my kids in music. Well, my daughter, I'm sending her to a piano, and a lot of people ask me, wait a minute, hold on, why aren't you teaching your daughter piano? Well, it's not a myth that it's really difficult to teach your own kids, because they're next to you, they want to fool around, your dad, they're going to do other things that they're used to, you know, being around you with. But you take them to a teacher and the attention is a little bit different. So with me, it was the same. My dad taught me as much as he can, but then I also had a teacher growing up a little later on in life, and but he would also teach me. So I learned from both, I would say.
So, besides your father, what kind of other music education have you had? Music schooling have you done?
Yeah, so right after my father passed, I was 13 when he passed away. And at that moment, I said, I'm going to be this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. So my mom found a teacher for me, a Japanese piano teacher, and I started really studying classical piano with her at that moment for a good 5-6 years. Into high school, so I went to an arts high school called LA County High School for the Arts it's on the campus of Cal State LA, and I went there for 3 years, and I started to study music there even more seriously, and then from there I went to Pasadena City College, then Cal Arts in Valencia, and did my bachelor's degree, and then I went to CSUN, which is close by here, and did my master's degree, and both I did both of those in composition. and a little bit in conducting and orchestration as well.
And you mentioned the piano.
Yeah.
Is that the instrument for you?
That's the instrument, yes. I play some other instruments, but that's my instrument.
What is it about piano that has overwhelmed, or in a good way, your music? It's part of you.
Yeah, so for me, piano, my dad was he played the piano as well, so I think that's where it started from there. But for me as a composer, to be able to compose music for orchestras, piano is a very necessary instrument. That's why in school, it doesn't matter which instrument you play, you have to learn the piano. It's mandatory for them. For someone to learn, you don't have to be a virtuoso, but you have to understand the piano. So for me to understand the piano so well, it helps me to write for the complete orchestra and to understand all the different ranges and things that are happening, because I could play the whole orchestra on a piano. Difficult to do that on other instruments. I'm not saying it's impossible to be a composer on other instruments and not know the piano, but knowing the piano is just really such a great instrument.
What is it about the piano, though, that helps you play for other instruments as well, as you described it?
Yeah, sure. So knowing the piano, after learning the piano for quite a few years, I picked up the guitar, for instance, and I sort of started to learn it myself. I have a friend, guitarist Greg Miller. He's showed me a lot of things as well. But in understanding the piano helped me to really understand how to play that instrument as well, because of all the harmonies and the notes and things like that. Of course, the techniques are different, but I started to learn that instrument. I learned a little clarinet. I learned a little drums and a few other instruments too along the way.
Does the piano give you a bigger range?
It does. It does give you a bigger range, because piano has 88 keys on it, 88 notes, standard piano, and most instruments will fall somewhere in the category of that range. For instance, the violin falls somewhere halfway through the piano, not all the way to the top of the piano, but close. And then the basses are down here, guitars in the middle, you know, things like that. So the piano encompasses all the instruments' range.
Is that why many of the famous composers have always been playing either the piano or the organ, depending on Bach, Beethoven, Mozart?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, majority of those composers did play piano as well, even if they played another instrument.
During the time that you were being taught by this private tutor, how many hours in a day were you practicing?
So when I really got serious about music, not that I wasn't serious before, but when I just said, this is my life's dream, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, I started studying with that teacher, and I would... In eighth grade, I would go to, before I went to school, school would start at 7:30. I'd wake up at 5:30, practice for 2 hours. And my school was 5 minutes, and then I'd walk to school, come back home, practice for another 3 hours, and then do homework. And if I had more time, maybe even practice more. But
good 5 hours a day.
Yeah. That's what, that time when I had that kind of time, I would practice that much.
And that's what it takes, right, to be good at something.
That's
at
what it
playing.
Takes.
Musical instrument, something like piano, which is very complex, I would think. That's something I would have loved to have played, by the way. Never happened, but unfortunately. But I love piano.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a great instrument. I think if I got a penny for every time I heard that I wish I played, or I wish my parents pushed me to play, or I wish I stuck with it, because some people go.
Right.
You know, their parents, they push them into piano, but then they don't want to do it. But then later they regret and say, oh, I wish I learned it, you know.
Right. Besides your father, who have been some of your other influences, people who have influenced you?
Yeah, so I've had other influences. The teacher that I started to teach, started to learn from, she influenced me quite a lot. And then I had other teachers, of course, throughout my studies that influenced me as well. And composers such as Khachaturian. Khachaturian is my favorite composer, by the way. Not just because he's Armenian, I don't know. Maybe because the music just resonates with me so much. I love all the composers. I love the Mozarts and the Beethoven, Bach and Liszt and Tchaikovsky, of course. But Khachaturian just has inspired me so much, because the way he infused our Armenian culture into his music and brought it to the masses as well, right. Versus, you know, obviously there's so many other great composers like Baba Janyan and Komidas and lots of other ones, Amichanyan, that I've been so influenced by. And they also influence my music too as well. Khachaturian's always been my hero, I would suppose.
And what do you think about his Spartacus?
Oh, one of my favorites. It's one of my favorites, yeah.
I mean, I've been listening to it more and more lately because I downloaded it. So
yeah.
It's just amazing, the range of the different pieces.
Yes, yes.
And the styles.
The styles are amazing too. His most famous one, I would say, was Guyana because of Saber Dance.
Correct.
That's what got him to that level. But I'm not saying it's my favorite one, but some of my favorite pieces are from Guyana too as well. But Spartacus is beautiful, and of course, The Masquerade.
Right. Right.
Is another one, yeah.
Did you enjoy being in music from the beginning, or it took some time for you to evolve to where you are today?
I enjoyed music since I could remember, honestly. In kindergarten, when I was going to Mesrobian, I had a little keyboard my dad got me, and I would take it to class with me just to play the keyboard.
You were really, music was part of your DNA.
I was just part of me all the time, and I would go to, he'd take me to events and things, you know, that even when I was really little, and I just wanted to, I didn't want to be anywhere else. I wanted to be with him and nice. Always be around the music, yeah.
Well, obviously, he's done a good job. Is becoming a good musician nature or nurture? Do you need to have it within you, or you can develop that over time?
I think both, honestly. I know a lot of people say it's got to be part of you. Perhaps those are the ones that excel more. I don't know. I don't know the statistics on that. But I think there's people that have learned later in life. I mean, even Khachaturian, for instance, learned. He started a little later than the usual five-year-old kid that starts, you know, like a Mozart and develops it. So, you know, in his case, maybe that was a little different. I don't know. But I've seen people develop later on in life, but I believe, you know, starting early on really is better because you do develop a little bit quicker, but it all really depends. Do I believe those people had it in them? I think so. I think
so. Obviously, you had it in you.
I mean, by the looks of, you know, from my father and being part of, you know, growing up in that house, definitely. I don't see any other thing I could have done, honestly. I mean, my brother
and sister. You were predestined.
I was. My brother and sister, Peter and Tanya, they both were learning music too as well. Peter, do you know my brother,
of course,
Peter?
Yes.
Yeah, you know Peter. So Peter, you know, was in music too. He did a lot of gigs with us throughout the years. But, you know, he went a different direction. He's an attorney, of course. And my sister is a school teacher. And she learned a little bit, but she didn't really continue it. But somehow, I don't know.
The firstborn.
I'm the third.
You're the third.
Peter's the first. Yeah.
Wow, really? Okay.
So it's my brother, my sister, and
okay. Well, I thought you were the oldest one. All right. Very good.
Yeah.
At what point did you start saying, "Oh, I want to be a composer," and afterwards, being a conductor? What's the progression there?
That's a good question. So I started the piano at age 5 or so. And then when I was about, I guess, 10 years old or 11 years old, my dad bought this program called Finale, and it was a music notation program. And I started to learn on it at like 12 years old, or maybe 11. I don't remember how old I was, but I started learning on it. Then I started to kind of compose my own music on that. That's when I started to really feel like I started working on composing. So around that age. Before that, my dad taught me a lot of improvisation. So he would give me a few chords. He would play a melody. I'd play a melody, and I would take the chords, and I'd have to figure out where those chords belong. So that was my first development of learning to play by ear. And composing, really, because composing and arranging have a lot to do with each other. even if you take someone's tune and I have to arrange it, I still really am being creative with that tune, right? If you, let's say you wrote a tune and I took the tune and now I'm orchestrating it for the whole orchestra, I still have to be creative. Even if I didn't write the tune, I'm still writing the other parts, right? So I started doing that at an early age. So I suppose maybe I started that younger than I'm thinking. But the composing that I really started to get into as I'm composing a whole piece of music, I would say I was a teenager at that point, and then really started getting into it at that age.
Yeah. And are the skill sets different from becoming a composer than just a musician, let's say?
Yes, I would say so.
Definitely. What are those added skill sets?
While there's a lot of crossover, composing or even playing by ear is different than when you just go and you learn, and you learn the first time, you're learning to read music and you're reading whatever's on the sheet of music, right? So then later you want to improvise, or you want to be able to play something by ear, you hear something and you play it. That's a little bit of a different skill, because you have to hear the music and be able to interpret that on your instrument itself. So that's another thing you need to develop as a musician. A lot of times, even in schools, you develop that. You do practice that. But sometimes there are musicians who are just really good at reading and following the notes, and they're incredibly amazing at that, better than other people are. And then there's musicians that could play by ear really well, maybe that don't read as well. And then there are musicians that could do both, you know. And those are the ones, I believe, the ones that could do a little more by ear and that could do both are the ones that go into more composing and arranging music, versus if you're just reading music. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying one is bad or one is... I'm just... You were asking about
Correct.
Composing, so I'm just kind of saying that in my opinion of it, those are the musicians that go a little more into the composing side, or the ones that have learned to improvise, the ones that have learned by ear a little bit more, and the one, a little both. You have to know how to read notes or to write notes in order to write music for a musician to play it. There are composers who do write music that don't read or write music, you know, the notation as well either. So it all depends. Some can do it without it. Some could do it with it. Some could do both, you know. So,
or some will work with, cooperate with someone else who can help them.
And there's another
put
thing.
Put the notes on paper.
It's very true. It's very true. And that happens a lot.
Right.
You know, especially a lot of times in the film music world, where a lot of them they're writing something maybe on their keyboard, and then they'll have someone else come in and orchestrate the music right. too as well. I'm not saying everyone, but I'm just saying sure. there are some that do that.
When did conducting come in for you?
So I watched my dad as a conductor for many years, but I didn't conduct till, I mean, I would copy him, you know, but I didn't start conducting when I was going to CSUN. I started there. I started taking classes, and that's where conducting started to take more place. And then I did some recitals, and then I started my concert series, and then I went into conducting a little more into that as well.
What are the skill sets you need to be a good conductor?
So first and foremost, you have to, all conductors play some type of instrument. So you grow up playing an instrument, knowing the music, reading. You have to know how to read music to be a conductor, because you're going to have a score in front of you. You have to understand how to interpret that and show the musicians what your gestures are, what you're giving them. So one thing, for instance, is the first thing you have to do is be able to keep time. So you have to give them the time, how fast or slow the piece is going to be. That's the first thing you have to be able to do. Secondly, you have to give them the proper gestures in order to, for them to understand what you're going to, what you're trying to say, how loud the piece is, how fast the piece is, what type of energy you want in this section, what you want here, what instrument is coming here. You have to tell that person, okay, you're going to start playing now. Things like that. You have to give them that energy. You have to give them the focus and all that type of stuff. So you really have to develop those types of skills in order to really show the musicians what you want from the music.
I've always wondered about this. So when you're conducting, you have the baton on one hand.
Yeah.
And don't the musicians already have the notes in front of them?
Yes.
Don't they know when they're supposed to be playing, or are they waiting for your instructions to start playing?
You know, it depends. It all depends. Sometimes you don't have to always have somebody conducting an orchestra, but a lot of times you do. It depends on this type of music. So for instance, if you have a band, there's a leader of the band telling people when to start or whatnot. Once they're starting and they have a groove, then everybody just does their part. But in an orchestra, it's a lot different. In an orchestra, you have many musicians, 80 musicians to deal with. And you don't have somebody yelling 1, 2, 3, 4 or somebody counting off something. So the conductor is doing that part. That's the simple part, is starting the orchestra. So you start the orchestra, everybody's together. The conductor could decide, well, these parts are going to slow down, these parts are going to speed up. Now we came to an area where everybody holds a note. It's called a fermata. I cut it off. Now they have to know when are they going to come back in. That's the conductor's job, okay, to bring that back, how fast that tempo is going to be, things like that. Also, there are some of the musicians that are not playing as much. For instance, unfortunately, a lot of times composers don't write a lot of parts for the tuba, let's say, or sometimes percussion even. They're sitting around and they have to count measures. So instead of them counting measures, a lot of times they'll still do it because they don't want to come in on the wrong spot. Yeah. The conductor will tell them, hey, you got to, you know, it's time. We're about to start this new section. A lot of times they'll know because in rehearsal, they'll listen to the music. They'll make some notes and say this and that. But a conductor's role is very important in all those things that I said. Also, the energy of music and what to bring out of the musicians too as well. That makes a difference. Because I could start an orchestra. Let's say they have the rhythm going, the feel of it's the type of piece. I walk away. They could play. They play their parts. But sometimes they need somebody to give them that energy, you know. If I want them to quiet down at a certain point, I could bring them down, hold a note, cut it off, go to the next section. If there's a soloist, sometimes the soloist, for instance, I had a concert a couple weeks ago I could tell you about as well. She had to hold a note at a certain point, so I have to hold the orchestra, and then I have to wait for her to go to the next note, and then I bring the orchestra back in. So those types of things are so important for the orchestra to have somebody to lead them in those directions.
When you're putting together an orchestra for a special project, for a special concert, for a special area, how long is the practice rehearsal time? How many days? How many weeks? How many months?
Yeah, that's a good question. Usually, it's not too long. Unfortunately, it's very costly, of course, to have an orchestra. If I was able to, I'd have 4 rehearsals a week, and you know, if I had that kind of money, you know, for the orchestra. But usually, for a concert with the full orchestra, we'll have 2 rehearsals before the day, maybe a week to 2 weeks before. Usually a few days before, and then maybe 5 days before that. So like within that week and a half, we'll have those 2 rehearsals. And then the day of the concert, we'll have a rehearsal during the day, and then we have the concert at night. But before that, I'll have a rehearsal with sections. Oh. For instance, maybe the string section, not the whole string section, maybe I'll have the concertmaster, who's the main string violinist, and then another violinist, the violist, cello, bass. I'll have 1 person from each string section, maybe a woodwind player, a brass player, and a percussionist, and we'll do a rehearsal. Just so, because they're the leaders of their groups, let's say. They're the principals of their groups. So we go over things. So that way we don't have to go over those things during the rehearsals. They could relay that to their fellow musicians, and then we could go in and just rehearse the pieces without worrying about all the little mechanics that we have to kind of work out.
Obviously, you're very passionate about this. I could tell, and I know that already. What is it about conducting that you enjoy? I mean, I could see the fire in your eyes. I mean, you could, obviously, there was no stopping you here.
And Sorry, I'm talking too much.
Wonderful because that show, it comes true. I've been to your concerts. It comes true beautifully.
I know you have. Thank you for always supporting.
No, beautiful. And I enjoy that. What is it about conducting that you enjoy so much?
I love the sound of the orchestra. So honestly, I just love to stand. That's the best seat in the house, honestly. So, I mean, if you're in the audience, you're in the, you know, in front of the orchestra, you're in the right place. You know, if you're a little bit behind the conductor, that's, you're hearing everything just as the conductor would hear it, you know? So for me, just hearing everybody surrounding you and that sound is just, there's nothing that beats that for me, you know? I believe even being in the orchestra, I've been in an orchestra, but as a pianist, usually you're a soloist. Sometimes they have music for orchestra, so it's not as much as, say, a string player. They're the ones that are all in there. But being on that podium and having the command to say, I want this a certain way, or I want this a certain way, as a musician, being creative in that way, not commanding them in a mean way where I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to do this and you have to do this. But I'm commanding, meaning I'm whatever I'm feeling in that moment on the music, I'm relaying to them and they're relaying it back to me. So there's this energy going back and forth with the musicians. And if you're good to them, they're going to be good to you. You know, that's how I've always felt, you know. There's different types of conductors, you know, I won't get into that, but if I always give them the right energy, I always feel the right energy back. And to me, that music making makes me always want to be up there.
Interestingly, though, as a member of the audience, we get to see you standing there from the back. And so we don't see you, the emotions you're going through as you're conducting, or your facial expressions. We don't get to see that. I'm sure a lot of that is going on during that period.
Of course. Yeah. It is unfortunate that the audience doesn't get to see what I'm doing. And it depends on the concert hall, too. Like if you're at Disney, which I conducted 2 weeks
ago. I heard.
When you're at Disney, there's seats, most of the seats are behind, but there's seats on the side and there's seats in the back of the orchestra as well. So if you ever have a chance to go to a concert, LA Phil or something there, try to sit back there and see. The sound is different though, I will tell you, because the sound usually is projecting this way because the musicians are sitting this way. And so you'll hear a little more of the percussion because they're in the back of the orchestra typically. But just to get a different experience, it's kind of interesting to do that.
Yeah. What kind of music do you listen to?
I listen to all sorts of music. So, of course, classical music. And classical meaning like Baroque, classical, romantic, 21st century music. Film music. I love music and film, especially with orchestral music. And then I listen to a lot of rock and heavy metal. I listen to jazz. And a lot of ethnic music, of course, Armenian music as well.
Nowadays, when you're composing, what kind of music are you composing?
Right now, with the projects I have coming up, it's a fusion. Most of my stuff is a fusion of music. So it has a classical foundation, but it infuses rock, it infuses jazz, and it infuses ethnic. Of course, me being Armenian, us being Armenian, I incorporate that too as well in my music.
Well, let's talk about that. What's coming up? I'm kind of very curious about it. I got an announcement on the email the other day about it as well. Please tell us about it.
Yeah, so every year I try to have one concert in Los Angeles where I either will have a full orchestra or I'll have my ensemble. I have two versions of the orchestra. One is a larger orchestra, one is an ensemble. So it depends on where I'm going to perform, how often I'm going to perform because of costs and things like that. So this year, we're having a concert on November 10 at Alex Theater in Glendale. And I'm going to be having a 40-piece orchestra. Wow. And I'm also going to have a choir, a 30-piece choir. And so there's going to be 70 of us on stage, and we're going to be, I'm going to be performing some of my music, some of my father's music and arrangements, and also other Armenian composers, some Khachaturian, some Babajanyan, and a few other surprises too as well that night. So it's going to be November 10, 2024 at Alex Theater, 6 p.m. And they could get tickets at edwardhosharian.com/events
or
on Ticketmaster as well. Thank you.
My pleasure. No, because I think the programs you put together are amazing. I've enjoyed them. More people should be enjoying them. So I'm glad that you're doing this again. It's really, really worthwhile. Tell us about your recent experience at Disney Hall.
Yeah, so I got a call from a flautist who has been playing for me for many years. She also played with my dad for many years, Salpi Kirkonian. Do you know Salpi?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So Salpi called me one night and she says, Greg, I have this great opportunity for you. I play with a Korean orchestra in Los Angeles. It's they are having a concert at Walt Disney Concert Hall, and they're doing a peace and harmony concert, and they want to bring in some other cultures into it. And they asked me about something Armenian, and she said, I have the perfect idea. I want you to, I told them about you conducting, and they want you to come and conduct a piece. And, you know, I was just blown away. I was like, wow, this is going to be amazing. This would be my first time at Disney Concert Hall. So I called the director, conductor, Dr. Yoon, and I said, he explained everything to me, what he wanted me to do. And he wanted me to bring a singer, so I brought in, her name is Natalie Biyukians. She's an Armenian soprano singer, vocalist. And we talked, and they gave us an opportunity to do this, to do a piece. So I chose one of my dad's pieces.
Oh, wonderful.
And that had a
great tribute.
Soprano, yeah, so it was a great tribute. So we went there. We did the rehearsal the day before. So we had one, because we were doing one piece that they brought us in to do rehearsal the day before. We got to rehearse one more time with the orchestra the day of. And then we did the piece, and I was amazed by just being in that concert hall, the acoustics, the sound, the feeling. And, you know, every musician always has little nerves or butterflies or whatever they call them before they go on stage. It doesn't matter how many times you've done it. If someone says they don't, I believe they're not telling you the truth, because it's always there. Of course it gets better, but there's always just that little feeling.
Nerves.
Of not nervous where I can't go on stage and play, more is everything going to be great, you know, like how is the audience going to receive it, you know, these things are always running through your head. And when they opened that door and I walked out, everything went away. It was amazing. That one it felt so good, you know. I felt like I was at the right place at the right moment. And I was. And it just happened. And thank you to my dear friend Salpi for bringing that together and making that happen. Of course, the orchestra as well, the Korean orchestra. Thank you to them for bringing that, bringing this dream to reality. And, you know, now I want to do concerts there. I've always thought about, you know, dreamed about doing concerts there, and I'm going to make that a reality now too.
Absolutely. Well. You're meant to be there.
So thank you. And I will tell you one more thing about that night.
Please, yes.
There's a part where there's an instrumental section in the middle of the piece, and there's a part where I hold the orchestra, and it's to my discretion how long the orchestra holds this note. And I, right at that moment, I put my head up and I said, I'm just going to enjoy this moment. And I held it a little longer than we did in rehearsal, but it doesn't matter. It's my decision, of course, as a conductor of what I do. And I just held it, and I said, this is what a feeling this is. I was listening to the sound and what was going on, and then I stopped, and then I continued the piece. So
that must have felt great.
It was an amazing feeling. Yeah.
And absolutely. Where are some of the other great venues in Los Angeles for orchestra music?
So when I first started these concerts, I was at Zipper Concert Hall, which was right across the street from Disney. It's a smaller venue. It looks a little like Disney, but it's smaller venue. It's at a school, Colburn School of Music. It's a beautiful hall, another great place for acoustics. Smaller scale as far as audience goes. Stage is a little smaller, but such a beautiful, acoustics are next to none there, and of course at Disney. There's the Seagram Shrimp Center, which is in Orange County.
Okay.
I know I went outside of Los Angeles for a second, but that's another great place. Alex Theater is great too, which I'm going to be performing at in November. That's another great place. Also the Ambassador. I think that's, you came
to the Ambassador. Yeah, I've been to the Ambassador, yes.
I remember you coming there. And UCLA, Royce Hall, another great place.
I've been to that one too.
Yeah. So yeah, I remember you being there as well. Yes. You've always been such a great supporter,
well,
Stefan.
Thank you. I appreciate what you do. I love music. So.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, what about Hollywood Bowl or the Ford Theater?
Yes, Hollywood. I've performed at the Ford Theater. I've never performed at the Hollywood Bowl. So that's
soon.
That's on my list. Yes. So let's put it out there in the world that it's going
to happen. Absolutely.
But I've been to the Hollywood Bowl, of course, many times.
And I think that half bowl creates good acoustics, I believe.
It does. It does. Even though there they do put microphones because it's such a long range. And outdoor, the sound just kind of goes up, unfortunately. But definitely the bowl helps, of course. Yeah.
It's supposed to be the largest open concert hall theater in the United States.
Yes, currently. I believe so, yes. Yeah.
And I've enjoyed many, many nights there.
I have too. It's such a beautiful, beautiful place. Especially I like going when they do they'll show a movie and then the orchestra will play the movies.
The John Williams score.
Yeah, John Williams. I've seen Back to the Future, which was great, which was Alan Silvestri and Danny Elfman, which they did The Nightmare Before Christmas, was amazing too as well. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned jazz music. I love jazz music myself.
Yeah.
And one of the subgenres of jazz music is Armenian jazz.
Yes, of course.
As a matter of fact, the intro to our podcast is a piece of Armenian jazz music we play, which I love. What can you tell us about Armenian jazz?
So jazz, I mean, when I went to Armenia about 15 years ago, I was seeing so much jazz happening over there. I was blown away by how much jazz was happening there. But I do know that even in the 70s, maybe even before that, they were already incorporating a lot of jazz into their music. There was that sound that it had. They were taking a lot of the pop music, but it had that jazz sound, and they had like Orbelian, for instance, and some of these other composers. They would incorporate some of this style into the music, into even the popular music. So jazz was happening such a long time ago in Armenian music. Of course, it's evolved and it's changed since then. You know, the style and what was happening. But I love incorporating jazz and Armenian, making the Armenian music sound jazz and still keeping that ethnic sound to it. And I will tell you, I know I take it back to my dad a lot because he was such an influence on me. In the 70s, and I think it was like 1977 or 78, I was just barely born. And he did an album with Adis, you know, the famous Armenian singer Adis. And they did, they did an album where my dad took these popular pieces and made it into jazz albums. So it was a jazz rock infusion Armenian album that wasn't being done before. This was the first time being done in the United States, especially. Things were happening in Armenia at that time, but in the U.S., this was the first time something like that happening. So that also influenced me as far as jazz goes. But I've been influenced by so many great jazz artists, Oscar Patterson, Miles Davis, you know, some of the great artists of our time.
Well, being a piano player, Thelonious Monk.
Thelonious Monk, another one too, of course, yeah.
Apparently, Armenian jazz goes all the way back to the 30s.
Yes, of course, of course.
That's when they started bringing jazz style into Armenian music, songs, and what have you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And interesting about that album you and your father did with Adis and Adis's songs. Is that available now?
It is. It's not available.
I would love to hear it.
It's not available digitally, unfortunately.
It's an album?
It is on album. I could show that to you. I'll definitely show that to you. I'm going to actually work with maybe speaking to his son or his brother to see how we could make it digitized.
I mean, that would be, I think, very interesting.
Yeah.
For Adis fans who are older now, and for jazz aficionados, people like me would enjoy jazz.
Sure.
Because along those lines, years ago, I still have it somewhere, where they played Mozart
Arabic style music, Mozart. It was amazing, very interesting music. This was done. This was played by the pyramids in Egypt.
Wow, how interesting!
They played
Mozart's pieces
and converted to Arabic style, Egyptian style music. It was phenomenal.
I want to hear that.
I will find the CD and let you have it. Borrow it.
We'll make a copy of it.
I would really be interested in this one because I think it will be very popular, at least for people like me who enjoy that fusion.
Sure, of course. I would be happy to share that with you, of course.
You mentioned some of these already. Who are some of your favorite composers?
Yeah, so going back to, of course, I already mentioned Khachaturian as one of them. Of course, the greats, Mozart, Bach, Beethoven, Liszt. I love Liszt because of his piano pieces, but Rachmaninoff has really influenced me because Rachmaninoff had that power in his piano pieces. Mm-hmm. And when I would study his music, it just greatly influenced the way I played and the way I composed my music as well from his music. But of course, there's some others, Brahms and Vivaldi, and then that's going way back. And then some of the more modern composers, such as if we go into the movie composers, because now classical music has evolved into the movies, right? I've obviously been so many years since that started, but movies is where classical music has been, newer music has been in the movie scores. And so you have someone like John Williams. Danny Elfman's a huge influence on me because I love his quirkiness. I love the sounds that he brings out. And then I love also songwriters or composers that are writing songs or in bands. Like, for instance, there's a band called Dream Theater. And all of those guys are all virtuoso musicians, but they play they're in a rock band together, progressive rock music, which is basically virtuosic virtuosic music in that genre. So they all grew up studying classical and jazz and all sorts of other stuff, and then they put that into this style of music too. So there's so many, you know, people that I've been influenced by, and other Armenian composers like Baba Janyan has been a huge inspiration to me. His music and his style, of course, he was a great pianist too as well. So.
You mentioned the scores for movies. I read somewhere that you've done that. You've written some music for various movies or...
Yes. So I started a long time ago. I don't know if you know Roger Koupelian, who's in the movie industry.
I've heard the name, yes.
Yeah. So he, in the original first Karabakh War in the 1990 or 91, he went there and actually filmed what was going on and made a documentary and then brought it back and asked me to score that. So that was my first sort of taste into that world. Then I had a friend in the industry who was a music supervisor on an animation series called Initial D. It was a Japanese anime. Someone in the States bought it, translated everything into English, redid the music. So he had me on as one of the composers. There was a few composers, but we did about 40 episodes. That was my first big, you know, type of soundtrack work that I was doing. And then from there, I got some other documentaries, and I've done some films and things like that as well. So
being in Hollywood, how competitive it is, this business.
Oh, it's very competitive.
To be able to be a mainstay in studios or in movies.
It's very competitive. As a musician, you really have to be able to do multiple different things if you want to stay in music. So for me, you know, I compose music for film and TV. I play gigs on the weekends. I perform concerts. I conduct concerts. I compose for different people, whatever they need. And then I teach as well. So I'm a professor as well. And I teach music. So really, I'm doing so many different things, but it's all based around music. And that's what I chose to do. In order to do something full-time in just that one thing, it's very difficult. I'm not saying it's impossible. Of course, it's possible. There's a lot of people that do it. But until then, you really, if you want to sustain a living in what you're doing, you really have to be able to wear a few hats and
you mentioned earlier some rock musicians. Did you have any aspirations to be a rock
band? I always did. And I had an opportunity, and I did go on tour once with a band that I looked up to for many years. I mentioned Dream Theater. So for many years, in my teenage years, I started getting into rock music. I was not into rock music before that. It was all classical and Armenian and jazz. Mm-hmm. That's all my dad raised me on, basically. Yes, we heard some rock and things like that, but I wasn't really into it. My friends listened to it. I always kind of, I don't want to say made fun of it. I just didn't listen to it. I just said, no, I don't want to listen. And then all of a sudden something hit me and I was like, wow, I love this music. I heard Rush, the band Rush, and the song Tom Sawyer, and I heard the drummer, just Neil Peart, just going crazy. And I said, oh my God, this is incredible. Why haven't I been listening to this? My brother Peter took me to my first Rush concert.
Oh wow.
When I was 14, I lost my mind. Then I had a friend that introduced me to the Doors, David Mosica, and he introduced me to the Doors. And then I said, oh my God, there's keyboards in rock. This is just what my mind just, you know. And I started playing, and he started a Doors cover band, and I started playing with him. He was a singer, and my friend David, and we started doing these gigs together, and I started really getting into rock. Then I started my own band after that, and then started going from there with my good friends Greg Miller, Vahagan Omanesyan. We started a band together, and then we started going, and then we started working in rock. And then many years later, I started another band with my friend George Belazikchan, whose dad is a musician too, John Belazikchan, famous oud player. We started to play together, and we started several rock bands together and started going. And then I had a friend of mine who is a drummer who I've known for many years. We played together, and he called me one day and said, hey, we have this opportunity. I'm in this band. We're going to go to Europe and do a show, and then we have another show in Atlanta that's a progressive rock group. So how would you like to come? And I go, okay, sounds great. I'll definitely come. I'll do it. I listen to the music. I love the music. So we went to meet the guy who started the band. I went to meet him, and I played a little for him. He goes, all right, you're in. So we went to Europe.
Nice.
So just intention to do to play in Europe. And then went to Amsterdam and played there. And while we were there, we got a call, not me, but they got a call saying there was an opportunity to go on tour with this band Dream Theater. Now, this band Dream Theater is one of the top progressive metal groups in the world, and they tour everywhere, all over the place. I've seen them, I want to say before that, I've seen them 10 times already. I've loved this group since, you know, the early 90s, you know. And I got a call saying, can you go on tour between July and August? And I was like, I don't care what I'm doing. I'll drop everything, and I'm going on that tour. So we had the opportunity to go on this tour with this band for 6 weeks. We played 25 shows with them in the U.S. and in Canada on a bus. And I got to know them. And it was the greatest thing. I mean, it was great to do the shows and to be able to play. And another great thing was to spend time on the road
with
your friends and hang out with them too as well. And I got to have my friend George come on the tour with me. And it was just such a great time, you know, and what an opportunity that was, you know, to do that.
Well, that's awesome. You know, sometimes you got to seize the moment and make the most of it and build on that.
Yes. Yes, and exactly.
That's fantastic. Yeah. You know, you've already mentioned some of the people I was going to bring up right now to get some of your quick opinions on what you thought of. We already mentioned some of them. We already talked about Mozart. We talked about Rachmaninoff. What about Maurice Ravel?
Oh, I will tell you something about Ravel. The greatest orchestrator of all time.
Really?
One of the greatest, yeah. I should say one of the greatest. There are some other greats, of course. But I would say he's, you know, in the top five, let's just say.
Why?
Just the way he brought out the orchestration of every color of every instrument. And we all study as orchestrators the great Bolero. I'm sure you know that piece. Dun, 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 dun. That piece was an orchestration, almost like an orchestration exercise, because it just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating. And you don't get tired of it because of the way he orchestrated the music. The piece has basically two melodies. The first melody repeats so many times. It goes on for like 17 minutes, right? And the second melody comes in here and there. But it's the way he orchestrated each instrument to come in and the combination of instruments that keeps the audience engaged. And that to me is so genius, that piece that makes me think that he's one of the greatest orchestrators of our
And during those repeats, it's building on it.
And it's building.
Like you have a crescendo going on it.
Absolutely. You're building the instrumentation, crescendo. Then, and it stays in the same key for 15 minutes, something like that. And then at that last 2 minutes, he brings it up to the new key. And then it's just like, oh my God. I don't know. It does something to you. So if you have a chance, listen to it again.
No, I have. I love it.
Listeners Absolutely. To listen again.
We talked about Franz Liszt.
Yes, another great pianist, composer.
Babajanian. Yeah. Let's talk about some conductors.
Yes.
Herbert von Karajan.
Another great conductor. He was one of the best because of the way his expressions were, his ability to bring across what he wanted to the orchestra. And, you know, he had a name. He had that name. He had that spirit of a great conductor.
Leonard Bernstein,
another one of the top conductors of all time. I love. There's videos of him in rehearsal. I don't know if you've seen on YouTube. If you ever have a chance, you could Google it and watch his rehearsals and how so meticulous he was. There's this video of him, and there's two triangle players, and he goes over and over. He goes, no, I want it, tikka tikka, something like. Does it again? No, it wasn't. Again, he wants a certain way, and they're looking at him like they're giving him that, but he's saying, no, you're not giving me. So such a meticulous conductor and such an amazing. I haven't gotten that far to the percussionist to give them a hard time that way. But I mean, he wasn't giving a hard time, but just to exactly what he wanted, but he knew what he wanted at that moment.
But at that level, when you have like 80, 120 people in your orchestra,
yeah.
Imagine being that meticulous and that detailed because you're hearing it and you're not pleased with what you're hearing.
Exactly, yeah. And it's incredible.
Even though 90% of the audience will not pick that up. But it was important for him.
It was important for him. I don't think anybody in that, maybe a musician or two possibly, but I don't think anyone else would pick up. Maybe not even a musician because you don't know what he wanted versus they're playing it correctly. It's not like they're not playing. It's just a certain sound he wanted from it.
Interesting.
So which was meticulous.
How about Arturo Toscanini?
Toscanini too, yeah.
The operas.
Yeah, I mean, some of the greatest operas, yeah. I've had the chance to perform some of them on the piano, which are...
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, opera.
Puccini too, of course, another one.
I love operas, also some of the Italian operas from Verdi and Toscanini. I love that kind of genre of music as well. It just puts you in a whole different world.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I love that too. I do too. I agree with you. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. We already talked about your upcoming event. I'm happy that it's coming along on November the 10th.
Yeah, can I tell you something else about
the event? Please, yes, of course.
So these events that we started, these concerts that I started back in 2010, we started a scholarship fund for my father when he passed in 1990. We had a memorial concert in 91, Huvarajan Kojan, which was a very famous conductor for the Santa Barbara Symphony, and he also played violin for the LA Philharmonic. For many years, Kimmy conducted that. We started a foundation under my dad's name, giving scholarships to Armenian music students pursuing a college education. And every year we give a scholarship. So if there's any musicians listening, please, or anybody listening, please pass that over to people that you know that are studying music in college. We would love for them to apply. And helping them through their college experience, of course. And so every year we do a concert, and raising funds for the foundation. And a lot of times I'll feature a scholarship recipient if they're available. A lot of times they might not be in the state or in the country at the time of the concert. Because right now it's really for the United States, the foundation, the scholarship fund at the moment. So anybody that's going to school living in the United States, so anywhere in the U.S.
But, and where do they go to find out more about the scholarship?
EdwardOsharian.org is where the scholarship
will be. That.
And the one for the November 10 concert, which we'll be doing, of course, again, presented by the foundation, is edwardosharian.org/events, and then you could find tickets there.
Wonderful.
But we're going to be doing, you know, it's going to be a great concert, and I'm looking forward to being there and having everybody there too as well.
You know, that's wonderful. Thank you very much, Greg. I learned a lot. I appreciate you coming by here.
Thank you for having me.
And I love music. I love your music. I love what you're doing. Again, thanks for coming by here and telling us, me and our audience, all the wonderful things you're doing. And we learned a lot about yourself as well.
Definitely.
That's fantastic. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You belong everywhere.
Thank
remember
you
that.
So much. Thank you. I appreciate
That's it for today. And remember, always drink the good stuff. Cheers, everybody.